98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport podcast.
You're on the That's What I Call Sport on Dublin's 98FM. It's Jamie Moore here on Sunday. You'll get us bright and early every Sunday morning between 9am and 10am. And the extra edition of the show every Sunday night between 11pm and midnight. And I'm delighted to welcome Manchester City and Ireland international Megan Campbell to the show. Megan, welcome to 98FM again. How are you?
Hi, Jamie. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem, Megan. Thanks very much for coming on. 33 senior caps for Ireland. Ex-St. Francis, Raheny, Florida State, Seminoles, among others as well in your career here in Ireland before you moved away to the UK. You're also a long throw expert and an ambassador for the Spar FAI Primary School Fives programme. And you're here to have a chat to us about all things soccer. First of all, tell us how you are. You suffered a really serious knee injury towards the end of last year, ruptured ACL, anterior cruciate ligament, which is the most serious knee injury a sports person can suffer. And unfortunately, you've had that injury and you're now in the middle of your rehab.
Yeah, it definitely is. I was very unfortunate to get it. I was in the middle of playing Champions League home leg in the round of 16. And it was just into the second half of the game, and I've gone to step up my right foot to then tackle up my left, and unfortunately my right knee, it should have bent, which it didn't, which ended up in the tear of my ACL. So it was quite unfortunate and very painful at the time, but you know, it's a long road to recovery, but I've done it before, and I know for certain I'll be able to come back from it again.
Yeah, you've had some other serious injuries, which we'll speak about in a minute. In terms of where you are now, Megan, how soon into the recovery process are you? I know you've had a very serious operation, and you know, I think different knee injuries take different times to heal, and the process of recovery is different. So where are you at now in the middle of January?
It was 5 weeks on Wednesday, so it's in the early stages of rehab. As such, they say it's a 6 to 9 month injury, and the first month is always the most boring when you can do minimal and trying to get the swelling down and the movement back. So I've gone back to City and started my rehab process, and thankfully I'm able to progress more so than others. I think I'm on the right road to recovery, basically, and I'm ahead of the game. So it's where I want to be at this stage, and I'm just happy and I'm trying to be as patient as I can with it. But at the same time, I'm trying to push myself as much as I can to get back as soon as possible.
Yeah, we've spoken to a couple of people in the last year on the show. Luke Byrne from Shamrock Rovers and a guy called Paul Corry, who's actually just had to retire due to a really serious ACL as well. And their scars are sights to cringe at or to wince at, should I say. What are your own scars like from the operation?
Pretty neat, to be fair. I think my surgeon's done a great job, and he's kept it to a minimum, and you know, he's done quite well with him. I know I have all faith in the world with Man City. I'm obviously at the best club in England, I think, anyway. And, you know, I know I'm going to get the best treatment, and thankfully I have done so far, and I'll continue to do so.
Yeah, as we said, it's a long process, 6 to 9 month injury. So you're looking at, you know, a long period on the sideline still. And Megan, it's not your first serious injury. You picked up a bad ankle ligament problem on international duty. You tore your quad in rehab, both of those in 2016, and you also had to have an ankle reconstruction later in 2016. So unfortunately for you, it's not the first time you're in the middle of rehab from a serious problem, because you've had a couple before in the last year or so.
Yeah, it's not been the best 2 years for me since I've signed for the club, but there's highs and lows with your career, and you know, it happens to the best of us. And I've got through it before, like I said, and I know how to deal with it mentally and physically as to what my body needs in order to get back to full of fitness. And I'm just going to work hard and use every asset that I have at City to get myself back on the pitch as soon as possible.
Make the comparison for me, Megan, between the mental recovery and the mental side of rehab like this and the physical one, because they're both very different, but both probably as important as each other.
Yeah, definitely. I think physically, obviously, at the very start of your rehab, you're not going to see much difference in, say, muscle atrophy and stuff like that. It's very hard to gain muscle and to see progress within your rehab exercises, etc. But I think mentally, it's always very tough with you seeing your teammates. Well, I see my teammates going out and they're going out training, and I'm still in the gym doing my rehab. And I'm, you know, you're staring at the same four walls constantly, and you're with the team, but you feel like you're kind of still an outsider towards the team as such. And obviously injuries don't travel, and it's unfortunate, but it's also for my benefit for my rehab, is to stay behind and to continue my rehab. So it's tough in one sense because you're not with a team and you're not travelling with them and you're not at the games and, you know, supporting them all the way. But then at the same time, you know, in the back of your mind, it's for the best and it's hopefully going to get me back as soon as possible. So it can be tough and it can be very lonely at times. Don't get me wrong. I've been through it with my ankle, like you said, and it's not an easy road to go through. I don't know anyone who's gone through a serious injury or anything like it's not easy to get back from. But when you do, obviously, and you reap the rewards, which I thankfully did last May, it's just nice to have those little positives in the back of my mind to know, you know what, Meg, you can actually do it again. So it's tough, but I'll get there.
Yes, and Megan, from the injury to the long throws you're listening to, now that's what I call Sport on 98FM. It's Jamie Moore here on Sunday. Megan, talk to me about from the injury to the long throws. I was watching some videos, which we're now going to post on our Twitter page, at 98FM Sports, of your long throws, compared to another Irish player in Rory Delap. And you were able to create a goal for Stephanie Roach against Slovakia. You were able to create another one for Louise Quinn, among two that I've certainly seen on video. It's like an arrow, it's like a dart. I'm not sure how else to describe it. How would you describe your own long throw weapon?
I'd say a great asset to have, but not one that I necessarily want to use as much as I do. It's obviously a great thing to have, you know. It's not something that I've ever trained or practiced. It's just been a natural thing, and I've been thankful to have that, to be able to use it to our benefit for both club and country, and obviously country more so than club. I've used it more. But, you know, if the team relies on that in order to score a goal or to win a game, then I'm going to do that for them. It's nice to have in the back pocket, but I do like to play with my feet as well.
Yes, of course, and we're not going to only associate you with the long throw, but if it is such a big weapon, and it is such a big weapon, particularly for Ireland under Colin Bell, and I know under Sue Ronan before that and so on, and you've used that at some of your clubs too, such a good weapon, why do you not like to use it as much?
Not so much as I don't like to use it. Maybe I said that wrong. I think it's important that, obviously, our club with City, you know, we like to get the ball down the grass and play football, and you don't want to be seen as that one-dimensional team who only have a long throw and stuff. And even with country too, you don't want to be just known as that team who, oh, they've got the girl with the long throw. Like, we're good enough with our feet, and there's very talented girls in that squad, and you don't want to take away from their talent as such. But obviously, it's a great asset to have, don't get me wrong. Like, if you're giving me a game against Holland to qualify for our first major tournament and I have to throw the ball in and when we score off it, then, you know, I'm going to do it, like, hands down. It's just one of those things that it's great to have, but I don't like to use it if we don't have to.
Yes, of course. And Megan, explain to me, you mentioned that you don't have to practice it or don't have to train it up. When did you first discover that you had a long throw? And I know any manager who you would have played under would have used it in certain games. It's not something that everybody has. So when did you first discover that you did have such an ability to throw the ball so far? And interesting to say that you don't have to practice it. It's just there. And if and when it's needed, you can use it without much effort.
Yeah, I think I was about 12 or 13 and I was playing with the boys team down in Drogheda. And I threw it and I was longer than the rest. And I think they just said, like, throw it again, Meg. And as I grew, then obviously it got longer, and it's been a great helping hand with me, with every team I've been to. Like you said, like over in America, it was a great asset for us. And then when I came back to City, we've used it a few times, and obviously with national team, it continues to be a great asset that teams can't really deal with. So it's not something that I'm going to stop doing ever, but hopefully we won't be able to, or we won't need to use it as much as we do.
Yeah, let's talk about your international career so far, Megan, and the Ireland women's team at the minute under Colin Bell. The 2019 World Cup qualification campaign has started fantastically well. You scored and got an assist in a 2-0 win over Northern Ireland away in the opening game. You then went to Slovakia, a 2-0 victory there as well. And then a scoreless draw away to the mighty Netherlands. I know you missed that game. I think you just picked up the injury beforehand, but joined top of the group with the Netherlands, 7 points from 9. A really impressive start under Colin. And I know the girls are playing 2 friendly games against Portugal this week. But it's been a really positive start, 7 points from 9. You couldn't have really asked for too much more than that.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you had said to us before the tournament started that you're going to have 7 points going into the new year and 3 games in and you play the European champions and you've got a 0-0 draw against them, I think any one of us would have taken that with both hands. It's it's honestly been something that I've never really expected, but it's great to see because we've such a young squad and there's loads of young players coming in through the ranks, and it's just great to have them have that opportunity to be in and around the squad and experience things. And, you know, obviously it was a great start against Northern Ireland, and I was very thankful to be able to help out my team and with the goal and stuff. But I think the emphasis went on our positivity as a team and, you know, our togetherness and the willingness to work for each other and, you know, do everything we needed in order to get the result on that night. And then we travelled, and, you know, with Colin, we take it game by game. We don't look forward as to, oh, you've got Netherlands after this game, or it was just next focus was on Slovakia. And when we went away there, we knew what we had to get 3 points away from home. And we were thankful enough to do that and keep another clean sheet. And I think the main, like a big factor in the last three results was our clean sheet, because obviously if they don't score, we're going to get a result. And I'll always say it as well. I remember the first day Colin came into a meeting with the team, and I sat down after just coming back from an injury, and he welcomed us into the squad and whatever. And he said, the one thing that will stick to me with me forever is, he said, I want to be in France in 2019, but I don't want to be there as a spectator or a fan. He's like, I want to be there on the sideline while he's on the pitch playing. And that drive and mentality, and knowing that your manager has that belief in you as a team and as players, you know, it goes a long way, definitely. And so it was to kick off the campaign like that with those words, to then come out the other side of the year with 7 points, you know, you can't complain at all.
Now, Megan Campbell, you're robbing my questions here, because I spoke to your manager, Colin Bell, on that week when he was appointed, and also before those recent qualifiers. And he said he first wanted to get the defence right, keep clean sheets and work from there. And I know the majority of the training and coaching he's done with you guys on the pitch has been defensive based, or at least at the start it was. But that has borne fruit with those two 2-0 wins, and to keep a team as good as the Netherlands quiet and stop them scoring is a real good base to build on. And like we said, with the attacking threats that the team has, we mentioned Stephanie Roach, you got the fantastic captain in Katie McCabe, to name a couple, and others aside as well. To get the defence right and then let the attacking players go and nick a goal or two seems to have been a good recipe so far.
Yeah, definitely. It's always a tactic that he's come in and tried to adapt the team too, is, you know, being solid and defensively being organised and structured to not allow teams to have those gaps and to be able to play through and concede goals, which we've done great to begin with in the campaign so far, and hopefully it will continue. You know, against Holland, people might look at it and look at the game and critique us for the way we're playing football and stuff, but at the end of the day, we've got a nil-all draw against Holland. And if you look back at it in 10 years, to say that Ireland qualified for the first campaign and in their group they drew with Holland 0-0, you don't see the 90 minutes, you just see the scoreline. So at the end of the day, we'll take that if it means that we'll qualify.
Yes, I have to say, Megan, I did find it quite strange, and it was a great result to go and get a point away to the Netherlands, but that, you know, the team was in the dressing room afterwards, you know, having a celebration as if you'd kind of won the match. I know you weren't playing, and the FAI had videos up on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. I did find that a little strange, that even though it was a great result, that 3 games into a campaign, the team seemed to be really, really celebrating a draw.
Yeah, but I feel like maybe if people looked in on it from that aspect, then they might think, they might agree with you. But I think from where we've all been and from where that programme and that team and the country as a whole for women's football, where that has come from, to be able to say that you've got a point against the European champions, you know, not many people have been able to say that in this small country, and this women's team has come a long way since those days where you're getting beaten by teams 6-8 to 8-0, you know, every time you're playing in a qualifier. So it might look as why you're celebrating, you haven't qualified for anything yet, which to a certain extent is true, obviously, because we haven't. But that point will go a long way in our hopes to qualify for 2019 in France. And it was a big result for the girls. And I think it was more like a relief and a deserved celebration, as, yeah, we've worked hard here today and we deserve what we've got from the game.
Yes, I just hope that the Dutch head coach doesn't use that maybe to their advantage, because the next two games for the girls in green, Megan, are two home qualifiers. It's been a long time since the campaign has begun and you've not had a home game yet, but Friday, April 6th, you'll host Slovakia and Tala before on Tuesday, April 10th, welcoming the Dutch to Tala. Two big games coming up. And for those unfamiliar, the seven group winners of the European qualification stage will qualify for France 2019 automatically. The four best runners up then go into a playoff process. And the start you've had and how things have gone so far, I know you may not be able to play much more in this campaign, but the start certainly will give everybody hope that if you can keep things up, you've got a chance to make the playoffs. But at the minute, you're staying toe-to-toe with the Dutch, as we said, and lots to play for with lots more games to come as well.
Yeah, definitely. We still know that we have to play Slovakia at home. Obviously, Holland, like you said, at home. We have to play Norway in a double header as well, home and away, they're a great team and they've been to many finals tournaments before, so it won't be easy coming up against them. And then obviously we finished the campaign with Northern Ireland at home, which I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that's where I'm back in and around the squad again with the girls. You know, that's my goal, is to be back in and to hopefully be a part of that success. If I'm not going to try and jinx it, but I'm hopeful that game could be the difference between us qualifying or not. Come August, so I'm hopeful that we'll get back for that. And you know, I've every faith in the girls and the staff and stuff. You know, they've been working very hard, and like you said, they're off in Portugal now for a doubleheader against another great team, which will only stand to us when we come up against those teams at home and away.
Yes, and judging by the weather, I know you're back home in Dublin at the minute. Judging by the weather in Dublin, it's a little bit chilly, so you'd probably prefer to be off in Portugal with your fellow girls in green, but I'm sure you'll be back with them soon enough. Megan, a final two questions. Let's go from the country to the club. You're playing for Manchester City, and you spoke earlier on about your long throw and how you didn't want to always, you know, be associated with that, and how the team were the same. And we're watching the Man City men's team under Pep playing such fantastic football. How do the City women's team play in comparison to the men's team, because the style at the club under the first team and under Pep is a passing style, and I know your own team is very similar.
Yeah, I think it's a philosophy that is spread out through the whole club at every age group, under 8 boys to under 16s girls, like the whole way up through the academies. That's the philosophy of how we want to play at that club and how we want to represent the club with our style of football. And obviously, it's come through in leaps and bounds with the men's team, and they're doing phenomenally well. And I don't think anyone would have expected them to do so well up to now. And you know, our team, I'm trying not to be biased, but we've played really, really good football at times. And you know, winning the treble last year and getting to the Champions League semi-final in a 4-year process where we've turned pro, it's great to see those progressions. And hopefully, we'll continue to progress and to win more trophies in the near future.
Megan Campbell, very finally, we were chatting during the week just to get ready for the interview, and I was asking you a little bit about your music interests, and we love to hear about the different bits and bobs that our interviewees get up to away from their sports pitches. And your granddad was Eamon Campbell, the guitarist from the Dubliners, passed away unfortunately last year. I know you had to play a massive game in the week he died, and you paid tribute to him on Twitter afterwards. What a musician he was. What sort of influence did he have on you, and what sort of music are you into, apart from, of course, the Dubliners, which I'm sure is number one on your playlist still?
Yeah. Obviously, he had a great influence on me. He had a great career and he worked hard to where he got to in his time playing with the Dubliners, and in the end, the Dublin Legends. And you know, I think that hard work and I guess like everything he did to get his success, you know, I look at that and I'm going to strive for the same thing, and I'll keep working hard no matter how many times something negative like an injury or something may happen. Or, you know, I'll always look back on the time where he's worked hard to get where he was, and you know, if he can do it, then I definitely can as well. And I'm trying to keep that same mentality as such, because you know, he came to every Ireland game when I was at home playing in Tala. When he wasn't away gigging, he was there in the stands, and he'll definitely be a missed face in the crowd, but I'll definitely be playing for him, if not all the time.
Yes, indeed. And if you're in the gym, Megan, doing your rehab at the minute, and you've got the headphones in, you're maybe in a couple of weeks' time on a bike or on a rower or whatever you may have to do for your rehab, what sort of tunes will be in your ears to get you going for the rehab and the workouts?
Yeah, I listen to pretty much everything apart from rock, I'd say. Not heavy metal stuff, but I listen to R&B, hip-hop, anything with a good beat, I'd say, that could get you through a tough workout. I couldn't do anything slow going into a workout, but yeah, anything with a bit of a beat and good music to it, I'll definitely jump on. So when we're on the team bus going down to away games, I'll sometimes take charge of the Spotify before I get kicked off by some of the girls, but yeah, I like the music. It's definitely something that keeps me going and keeps me focused when I'm training, and even off the pitch when I'm trying to chill out too. Like,
that is always a big challenge for a footballer, to be on the music, on the bus or in the dressing room, because you've got so many players and coaches as well who want this music, that music, the other music. So it's a job that you have to have a bit of confidence in your own music taste to be on the tunes.
Yeah, definitely. It's not an easy job, that's for sure. You always get critiques from, you can't please everybody, can you? So you try and play the easy stuff that everyone will get along to. And I think a lot of the time we throw it back to the 90s, where everyone understands and listens to that music, even the staff. So it can get to be quite a laugh on the bus.
Yes, of course. And a shameless plug, get the 98FM app and you'll have all the tunes that you want. That is Megan Campbell, Manchester City and Ireland senior star, speaking to us here on 98FM. She's an ambassador for the Spar FAI Primary School Fives programme, which was launched with a pop-up training session at School World of CBS in Dublin, where former internationals Keith Andrews and Megan, as we're speaking about, provided a coaching masterclass to students from School World and St Vincent's Girls National School. The five-a-side school blitzes are open to boys and girls from 4th, 5th and 6th class and puts emphasis on fun and inclusivity. You can register now for the Spar 5s by February 9th at fai.ie/primary5. Megan Campbell, thanks so much for your time. The very best of luck in the rehab, and I'm sure we'll chat to you again when you're coming closer to your return later this year.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate it.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Back live this Sunday morning from 9.
98FM.